My name is Shin, and welcome to this session. This is about how to get more out of your SQL Server 2012 in the Microsoft private cloud environment. So in this session, we want you to take away with first some understanding of how SQL Server is going to fit into your overall strategy of private cloud and what are the key capabilities, and learn about some of the best practices that we have built along the way of building our private cloud appliances, and also share with you some of the roadmaps with some of the upcoming features in Windows Server 2012 and also System Center 2012 SP1. Some of them are game changers that we're really excited about. So the agenda will take a look at the journey to the cloud, from virtualization to cloud computing, what are the key stages, and how SQL Server fit into that. And on top of the best practices and roadmap, we'll take a deeper look at the private cloud appliances at the very end. So without further ado, let's start with this is the Gartner's depiction of the journey to cloud, illustrating the virtualization to computing, to cloud computing into stages. Five main stages in here. The first one is about virtualization. Basically, you think of that as a consolidation effort that you focus on reducing your capital expenses. And in here, maybe you want to defer some of your acquiring efforts or of your hardware assets. And for the next stage, that you move on to focus on, for example, operational improvements, such as also flexibility, speed, and also how to manage your downtime more efficiently. And here, the virtualization start to provide you a very basic automation tool, if you will, and help you to move on to the next stage, which is private cloud. And here, you're ready to actually introduce, for example, self-service, where you want to actually think about the relationship change between the IT and also business. In this stage, we start to think that IT will start acting at a business, if you will, and start to provide business such as usage metering and also chargeback. Of course, not all organizations will stay in this stage, but instead, they will start to think about the hybrid the cloud model, which actually to extend, for example, a portion of your cloud computing into the public cloud space. So for example, if you want to process some of your peak workload, this is where the public cloud can make sense. So it can allow you to build more flexibility or agility into your business. And the last stage, of course, is the full migration to public cloud. And this will happen as the public cloud infrastructure matures, especially with concerns that people may have about security, availability, and also possibly compliance as well. So what's worth pointing out, though, is that doesn't have to be that every business will move to public cloud in the end. So for example, some will probably just camp out at the private cloud or a type of hybrid cloud. So because they can actually just be sufficient for their usage patterns. Then how does SQL Server fit into each of those stages? We actually look at SQL Server offerings as a continuum, based on the level of control that you may have on your hardware resources and also on your infrastructure, and as well as the level of cost that will suit your needs. So the highest level of control can be found by installing your packaged resources on-premise. So in here, you have full control of your hardware and your software. While moving up, for a larger scale deployment, you would want to make some cost savings by having some hardware in terms of hardware and also in terms of infrastructure and also manageability, for example, and also still retain that compatibility by introducing, for example, consolidating your databases onto the private cloud appliances. And here, essentially, you're enabling infrastructure as a service to your internal customers. With that, you still have full control of your infrastructure, but the areas like security or availability and compliance are your own responsibilities. If we continue with that, we can see that you can also run SQL Server in the Windows Azure virtual machine. This essentially removes the hardware and also infrastructure management cost. With that, you're actually deploying in the public cloud. So in here, you have control over things like your OS and your middleware, but you also have full 100% compatibility. The PaaS offering, which is now called Windows Azure SQL Databases, this is going to be providing you a very cost-efficient database service. So in this, you don't have to worry about hardware or softwares like the OS or the middleware, because they can all be taken care of for you. What you can focus on instead is your business logic. So in here, you have the most efficient, also reduce your TCO, RTO. So for this session, we'll be mainly focused on the private cloud. But there is another session that's going to be delivered by my colleagues, Guy and also Evigny, tomorrow afternoon on how to migrate to SQL Server in Windows Azure VM that I strongly recommend you to also attend. Let's take a look at the definition of Microsoft Private Cloud. So essentially, we have four pillars, or main four business drivers, if you will. So they are resource pooling, which is about pulling together all your hardware resources, making sure this is where you start your consolidation or virtualization from. And elasticity, which is about scaling up and down your resources to meet the scale of your the workloads. And the self-service part ties back to what we mentioned just now about the IT and also business relationship change. And here, you want to introduce a model that can reduce the intervention or even remove the intervention from IT for your deployment or VM provisioning. And for monitoring a chargeback, also you want to think of IT as a business model so that it can actually build in that cost associated with your resource consumption and bill you accordingly. We'll walk you through the stages or the life cycle of deploying an actual private cloud step by step. We'll talk about what each steps are and also what are the key steps or tasks that you would take on and what are the tools that you will be leveraging, as well as providing you some of the best practices. So before we go over to some of the details, I just want to spend a couple more minutes on this architecture, or how Microsoft actually provides the software, the whole software stack, if you will, for your private cloud solution. So down at the bottom, we have infrastructure layer, where we have the Windows Server, Microsoft Hyper-V Server, as well as the System Center VMM, directly interacting with your compute, with your storage, and also with your network to provide this layer of virtualization. And also the level of, the management at the level of virtual machine, if you will, to provide you capabilities like live migration and also load balancing. At the data tier, we have SQL Server, the reporting service, and also SQL integration service. On top of those, we have the SSMS that provides you the management at the database or SQL instance layer. What I want to highlight in here is the MOM pack. The management packs in here actually enable SQL to be discoverable for your operations manager, so that you can actually perform, for instance, monitoring of your performance metrics or your availability metrics, and also configuration changes, so that it's kind of enlightened in a sense. And the highest level is the management, where we see the various components of system centers come together. For example, the configuration manager provides the patching management. Operations manager provides you alerting and also monitoring. Orchestrator provides you the ability to automate your workflow. And the service manager provides ticketing or change control. So together, they provide you this management all at the level of your private cloud or your service level. So let's drill down a little bit to the planning stage. So in this stage, you start off by performing an inventory of your existing system. So in terms of how resources are being consumed, this is the stage where you can discover problems like database sprawl. And the tool that you will be using in here is the MAP tool, Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit. We'll be actually talking in more details at a later slide, so I'm just going to be going over real fast in here. After you have a good understanding of how many servers that you have in there and what are your potential needs in terms of resources, you'll probably think, before you actually do the physical to virtualization conversion, you would think about whether you want to do as is or you actually want to leverage some of the new capabilities. So that's when you would think about whether you want to, for example, upgrade to a later version of SQL Server, or you probably want to migrate from some other different database platforms. And the key step that we want to highlight in the planning stage is the design service step, which is, you can think of this as the design pattern, if you will, for your software programming. And here, we want to think of deploying the private cloud very much like the same. You would want to think about the patterns that you want to go after. And we'll be talking a little bit more in detail, so don't worry if you don't fully understand what I mean in here as of now. And the last step is to do the physical to virtual conversion, where you, for example, you can do this within System Center using the VMM, and also there is this particular feature called P2V conversion. And also you can have the capability to do V2V conversion. For example, the tool in here is the virtual machine converter solution. It allows you to do VMware virtual machine to Hyper-V conversion. So what is this MAP toolkit and what does it do? So essentially, this MAP toolkit is a agentless, so meaning that you don't have to install it everywhere, but it can perform this task across your network, for example. It can collect, do assessment, and also reporting on your infrastructure so that it collects the performance data and also recommend to you what is the optimal placement for your workload. So this comes in very handy, especially for SQL type of workloads. And some of the newer developments in this field you can see is that I want to highlight three of them. The first is you can now evaluate your readiness for Win 8 or Windows Server 2012 readiness. So you can see if it meets all the requirements for deploying on Windows Server 2012. And also it extends its virtualization scenario to include Linux operating system as well. And also it can migrate, help you, do inventory for VMware-based, like vCenter or vSphere, all those virtualization platform as well. So you can actually find more details at the link at the bottom. So this is the step that I just promised you to talk into a little more detail, where we talk about the deployment patterns. This is from our interaction with our customers who are deploying or evaluating private cloud. And they come into two flavors. The first pattern is what we call centralized IT services. Here is what you normally can find is that they have their databases, normally centrally managed, and they typically also have very, very high requirements in terms of HA, or they have already had the capabilities to deploy sophisticated HA solutions. And they also potentially have large VMs that they're managing in their infrastructure. So what this type of pattern optimizes for, as you can see, is that the high availability part, or you know, uptime, if you will. So it's well-suited for the mission-critical business. And the other pattern that we have is what we call as a self-service VM provisioning pattern. So in here, the HA requirement may be less of a concern. Instead, they may actually have just a VM-level HA, and that should be sufficient. But there are muscles in terms of VM provisioning or using of templates, for example, is actually strong. And they may actually have deployed or have implemented a very good library or a very full-fledged library of VM templates that's being used for creating this type of workflow that you can actually automate your VM provisioning. So for example, doesn't have to go through IT to provision or your VMs. So some of the best practices that we want to share with you in this stage is that, in terms of sizing, you should look at what is your real resource consumption in terms of CPU, memory, as well as IOPS or, IO. If you want to do over-subscription of resources, you need to be aware of the potential performance hit. So for instance, if you want to do CPU over-subscription, we probably wouldn't recommend this on, for SQL workloads because it's really CPU intensive, unless you have some latest, processors such as, supporting the second level address translation to offload some of those work, we probably would stay away from that. In terms of memory, we all know that SQL loves memory, right? And with the dropping cost of, with the cost of memory has been, continuously dropping, we think, it's just going to give you, the biggest bang on your bucks if you actually invest more in your memory to maximize your performance. And a rule of thumb in here is that you can size your memory based on your hot data set. And about storage, here are a few kind of lessons learned when we're building our private cloud appliances. Number one is that as soon as you're starting to consolidate your sequential IOs onto the same disk, you start to see those type of IO pattern of as sequential start to vanish. So you would want to actually instead optimize for your random IO. And by the same token, you can actually think less of an important thing for your disk placement if you're also consolidating your storage. In terms of the VHD format, traditionally we have been recommending folks to use, for example, the fixed size VHD or even pass-through disks because of the potential performance difference you will be seeing. Well, now, recently we actually feel it's safe to recommend, dynamic VHD to actually being deployed in your private cloud. Why? Well, first, we have seen that the performance difference between the static or the fixed size and also dynamic to have, been narrowed. And on the other hand, it's really been outweighed by the manageability advantages that you would gain out of, the dynamic VHD, especially if you have more IOPS to spare in your IO subsystems. So, for example, you can do thin provisioning, and also this is all enabled because you the VHD just can grow dynamically. And in the Windows Server 2012, one thing that will be now included in our best practices is to use the VHDX. This is a new VHD format that has been introduced just in this version, but it has a lot of advantages, such as, the performance side, it's not a concern anymore, and also you have the VHD size, support up to 64 terabyte. And speaking of numbers, so you are all probably familiar with some of the limits that we have in Windows Server 2012 R2. In Windows Server 2012, some of them have been expanded by a factor of 4 or even 5 times. So the key message in here is that it enables you to have extremely large VMs and also a lot more numbers of VMs in your private cloud infrastructure. So now, I'd like to walk you through how you can actually use the map tool for actually deploying first a performant inventory in your private cloud infrastructure. So here I have my map tool installed. This is my 7.0. So we can just use an existing database in this particular demonstration. And here is the list of steps that you can perform using this tool. So first we can do an inventory. So if we go off and start on that, we can, by specifying what type of scenario we want to go after. For example, we want to include SQL Server, or we want to do also MySQL or Oracle databases. We can just by selecting those and then providing the discovery mechanism and provide also the credentials and things. Since these steps are going to take a while and I have done those collection beforehand, I can actually just show you the results in here. So for SQL Server, for example, this is what we have discovered in our infrastructure. We have, for instance, SQL Server 2012 and also 2008 R2 and the number of instances that you have found. And similarly, we have the same, similar data collected for Oracle databases as well. And even it can include some of the application level data. For example, this is where, all my computers, what I found in terms of what software has been installed. So on this one, I have, for example, different components of MySQL Server, as well as MySQL 5.5 and also Oracle. So to actually have more details, you can actually start from this part. You can actually prepare new reports, and you can select and also customize what type of reports you want to generate for infrastructure. And since I've already run those reports beforehand, I can show you what they really look like. So in here, for example, it tells me how many number of instances I have found, and even more, which ones of them are SQL Server engine databases, and which one of them are possibly reporting services, or are there, integration services. I can also have a more detailed look at this in terms of, which version of SQL Server I have installed by looking at this detailed report. So for example, I have 2005 and also 2008 in my infrastructure. And for my individual databases, I can drill down to the level of, what's my database size and things like that. So since I have multiple versions of SQL Server installed, it can also provide me a proposal, a report on, if you want to upgrade to SQL 2012, what are the steps that you can take? In addition to SQL Server, we can also do the same for MySQL and also Oracle databases. So in this case, I can find out what are the version numbers for MySQL and also for Oracle databases. And also, accordingly, we can have a migration discovery proposal prepared for you. If we go back to our map tool, some of the other steps that we can take is you can also collect your performance data. So if we hit go, and we want to append to the same report, and we can specify what's the duration of this, you know, report that you want to cover. And since I have also run this before, so I'll just cancel this part. And here is where you can take a look at the performance metrics. So you can see all your CPU consumption, the memory, and also the disk I/O are all listed out. So this gives you a fairly good understanding of the size of your workload so that you can see what would be the potential hardware requirements for you to do the potential sizing. And to take that a step further, you can even actually look at the possibility of consolidating onto our private cloud appliances. And this is included in this next step of analysis for you. So this is our HP Enterprise Database Consolidation Appliance. And we can take a look at the spec of this. The CPU, this, and also include the memory and the disk capabilities. Essentially, what this allows is that you can have hundreds, if not thousands, of databases to be consolidated onto the same rack. So this report can also help you understand how many, you know, racks, if it's half a rack, that you will need to actually to accommodate your needs in terms of consolidation. So again, this map tool is a very good inventory tool that you don't have to install into your infrastructure across board. It's very non-intrusive so that you can perform that data collection and also build that intelligence for your workloads. And now let's move on to the next stage, deploying. So this is the stage where your initial setup and also configuration is done. So other than, you know, creating your VM from the P2V conversion, you would also think, you know, about creating your VM, the new VMs through templates. This is provides the better standardization, also the automation that you would need for the next step, for example, for your self-service. So in this step, we talk about, you know, you can do the build automation and also user request handling. And the self-service in this step actually can come into two flavors. One is for untrusted users. So for untrusted users, this is what we mean is that you have a user who wants to actually send in a request into your system, but this request needs to be approved by the IT admin. So for that to happen, you can use the Service Manager self-service portal. And on the other hand, you can also have a scenario where you have trusted user. For example, you have a department and this, you know, they have been repeatedly provisioning their VMs on their own, and then you can over time grant them the privileges to do this on their on themselves. So this is when you can use the app controller and also to actually go through that experience for them. In both cases, you would need to actually use the VMM to provision for, you know, all your VM provisioning would go through VMM. And if you want to build more automation, actually you can leverage the orchestrator in this part to actually automate your workflow. So these two, the first two pillars, are critical for the self-service pattern that we have introduced previously. And for the high availability and also disaster recovery, they come in more critically for the centrally managed IT services pattern that we just introduced. And we would look into more details that at the later parts as well. So just a few more words on the VM template. You know, how do you actually create a SQL VM template? This is, you know, when you can use the UI in the setup. Where you go through this advanced and also image provision or preparation of a standalone instance of SQL Server, and you can actually finish the image provisioning using the configuration file that you can provide to your setup programs. And after this VM template is generated, what you want to do is that you can support, for example, the provisioning script to hydrate or, you know, to instantiate this VM when you're actually putting that in your infrastructure. And we also have the step-by-step guidance below. So if you're interested, you can also take a look and have a try. And here, I want to also show you how you can actually do the self-service provisioning using the app controller. This is for your trusted user scenario that we just talked about. Let's switch to that. So in this example, I'm going to be opening up my app controller portal. I'll just continue. Here, I'm the administrator under this particular domain. I have a private cloud infrastructure set up on this particular laptop. And after I first log into this portal, I need to first set up some configuration and also especially set up a configuration to my VMM. So I can create a new connection and I can name it as VMM Server 01 Connection. And here the VMM, the name of the server is VMM. One, provide also with my domain, and then I'm ready to go. This would take a few seconds to actually pop up, but as you can also see in this controller, this particular page is that you can also do public cloud management through the same portal. And as well, you can see that there are some resources underneath that you can use as the community input as well. So after this is done, this connection is created, what we're going to do next is to actually create a user role. And then also we create a user or the group of user and to be assigned to that role. Yeah, now it is ready, and let's make sure it's the connection that we're talking about. And then we can go under settings and user role. We can start off by creating a new role in here that we can call as self-service, providing the name, and then we can make sure we're adding a new member in here. So under the same domain, for example, in here we're creating a new user called sales IT admin, so that they will be having the same privilege to actually create their own VMs. Sales IT. Just to make sure. Okay. Yep. Now I'm good to go. And click on OK. After this is provisioned, we are ready to actually log out so that we can re-log in as the new user that we have created. So in here, let me just log in. Making sure this is the connection that we're using. And then let's go off under the libraries. So here is where we have all the templates stored. And under templates, we can see that we have two point of sale system service templates. And in addition, we have two VM templates. And now we're using this report VM template to actually generate yet another instance. So that's hit deploy and make sure this is the private cloud that we're pointing to. And then what we can do next is that we can specify the VM name. For example, I can call it report server ticket. And then we're good to go. So let's go off and under the jobs, and we can see that this is now being provisioned. Well, as I only have very limited resource on this demo laptop, and this job essentially is going to fail because it doesn't have the necessary resources with it. But this is just, you know, a proof of concept, you know, what type of capabilities that you can do with the self-service portal and also with the app controller portal that we're going to be using heavily in the system center. So with that, let's go on to what are the potential, you know, recommendations that we have in terms of the high availability. So for HA that we talked about the two scenarios or two patterns. For self-service, you would want to think about, you know, using the highly available VM that is kind of the built-in or a very inexpensive way of providing your VM level virtualization and also HA capabilities in here. Essentially what it does is that in a hosted environment, when you are creating a new VM, out of the box, you have this already as your default setting to have your VM actually being highly available. In terms of more, you know, centrally managed scenario or, you know, for your more mission critical scenarios, we would think, you know, always on and together compounded by, you know, guest clustering, host clustering, you can have this layered approach to your HA that we'll showcase a bit later in more details in an example. And also for always on, it actually provides you both unplanned and also planned failover. Although we see that it has a lot of more capabilities, you know, or applicability for the unplanned scenarios. And also live migration, great for your planned scenario. So for example, if you want to do patching and also, you know, system upgrading, this is when it comes in handy. That we'll talk a bit more here. So first of all, this is a real case study that we performed for Care Group, which is a leading teaching hospital of the Harvard Medical School. So in here, what we are essentially doing, the requirements in here, though, is that they want to do their quarterly drill, but they are suffering from very, very long downtime and also as well as, you know, very many manual steps to actually recover. So that is very error-prone. In this particular example, what we're doing, of course, is a simplified deployment, is that we have several physical nodes. On node A and node B, we're deploying the host-level clustering. So what it essentially provides is the OS level and also hardware level protection. So as indicated in here, because it can detect those failures. And also, we also have the guest clustering built in for the SQL instances, because SQL is clustering aware. And in here, it provides you, in case you have SQL failures, it can protect you from there, from that case. And compounded, take that a step further, we have always on. So what always on does is that it can have more granularity. So you can specify at the set of databases, for example, to create that availability groups, so that when you have, for example, failure on the potential, possibly a subset of databases on this side, the other side, you can choose based on the mode. For example, if you choose synchronous mode, all the transactions have been already hardened on the other side. So it is ready to take over the workload any moment. So it's great for your HA. You can fail over any time. On the other hand, you also have asynchronous mode, which is very useful for your, for example, DR scenario. So in here, you probably can choose a manual failover and determining whether it is a good thing to do, and then you can initiate that action. So together, always on, together with guest and also host level clustering, they provide you extremely high availability that is, you know, suit your most critical needs for your scenario. And also take a look at the live migration. So how many of you know about live migration or, you know, use of that? Okay, just a quick introduction on live migration. It is a feature that's first introduced in Windows Server 2008 R2. So what it allows is that you can actually have your running workload move to another Hyper-V node in the same cluster without any downtime. So how it does it that it actually first copying over the configuration data for your VM, and then while you are still operating on this particular side, the node on this node A, you're also being, you know, your memory content is being copied over as well. So keeping up all the changes with the delta in terms of your memory pages until you're ready to do the final switch, and then your workload is moved all together on this node B. So this is not surprising, right? This has been around for a while now. But what we want to highlight in this particular case is that in Windows Server 2012, there are some really exciting changes that came in. So first of all, you don't have to be within the same cluster, the Hyper-V cluster, to perform these actions anymore. Instead, I mean, you don't even need to be in any cluster. So you can just have two Hyper-V node, you know, you can just perform the same action. And on the other hand, before you can only have one migration at any point in time, and now you essentially have no limits. So you can have any number of concurrent live migrations you want. But of course, it's going to be constrained by your hardware resources, for example, your network bandwidth. And also, we support in the Windows Server 2012 the live storage migration. So meaning that the VHD that is attached to your workload, to your live running workload, can be moved around without any downtime to your workload. So that is also giving you a lot more flexibility. Okay, so let's now move on to the last stage of our deploying of a private cloud, which is, you know, how do you want to manage it? Because, you know, here you want to see, you know, monitoring the system health, for example, the performance metrics, and also your resource utilization, and also this can in turn facilitate you how to build a report, and also, you know, metering the usage, for example. What we want to highlight in this part is the scale aspect, you know, meaning that how do you scale up and down your workload, your resources to suit your workloads. So we've already talked about, you know, you can use the fast provisioning that, you know, associated with a self-service portal. And we want to also highlight is that the scenario of very large VMs, because with Win8 or Windows Server 2012, you are essentially going to be able to deploy some really large VMs to actually, you know, make sure that you have your better resource consumption or utilization. In this case, what we want to talk about is the resource governor. So how many of you, you know, a show of hands, know about the resource governor feature? Okay, so some of you. Okay, just a quick introduction on the resource governor. It's a capability that's introduced in SQL Server 2008. So this allows you essentially to actually specify the limits on your resources. For example, your CPU, your memory, and then it can, you know, associate that, like, you know, carve out the resource pools and then associate incoming requests with the each individual pools so that you can create that resource kind of isolation for your, you know, especially this can be relevant for your multi-tenancy scenario. For example, if you're a hoster, you probably want to create that, you know, isolation between your different workloads or your different clients. And then this can be handy, and also even for your chargeback as well. And then we can actually show you how this is done in a demo in here. So in this particular example, I'm trying to start a workload for my two customers. And what I would do is that I would see, you know, how you can actually cap your CPU usage, for example, for your two customers so that they can have some sort of isolation between them, and also, you know, they have more predictable performance as well as charging aspect of it. First, I will try to affinitize my CPU. This is just so that I can show easily because I have four cores on my machine and I want to just use one for this demonstration. And I can create the two resource pools and also two workload groups for my two customers. And also I created my two users. And also a computationally heavy workload through this procedure. Trying to grant the necessary privilege to my user, to the workload. And the key thing for the resource governor to work is a classifier function. This is the part that does the mapping for you. When there is an incoming request, this can map the request into the individual resource pools. And then let's make sure all these changes to the resource governor are going to take effect. Okay, now we are ready to add the resource pools, the CPU consumption part, that we have already added the two performance counters to monitor what is the CPU usage for each of my resource pool. And on the other hand, let me start my workload. I instantiate make sure this is my user B, and with that, I'm ready to start. As you can see, immediately after I start this workload, my CPU consumption starts to climb and all the way up to 25%. Well, this is because I have four cores and 25 is really the max that it can go up to. And if I start also my CPU consumption for the other user, well, immediately this drops, and they're sharing the same core, and they're using about 50% each. So this goes about, you know, 12.5. So if my workload A is actually more important, I want to guarantee, you know, more resources available for it, what can I do? Well, you can actually specify more CPU, for example, to be more, to be available to this particular workload. For example, in here, we're specifying 75%. And let's go back to our performance counter. And you see that they start to depart. And now, if my workload A finishes, let's stop it. And what you would observe is that my workload B starts to take over. It will use all the CPU on this particular core. Well, what if this customer doesn't actually want to pay this much? They want to, you know, they're just happy with the 50% of CPU usage. What can you do? You can also specify the maximum of CPU usage to cap it at the 50%. And if we execute that, and let's see, it drops from the 25% and all the way down to half of it. So this is essentially the change that we have introduced in SQL Server 2012 that facilitates the multi-tenancy scenario, and another change that also available in the resource governor in SQL 2012 is that we have introduced more resource pools to be available. So now, yes, you can also affinitize your resource pool to particular scheduler. Yeah, that you can do as well. So, yeah, that's a good question. Okay, so we've talked about, you know, how do you do deployment. walking you through the stages. And now let's take a look at, you know, what's upcoming. So here, I mean, we want to talk about some really exciting stuff that's, you know, enabled in Windows Server 2012, and also even more in System Center. So first, in Windows Server 2012, is that there is this new Windows File Server. So traditionally, you know, we know that the SAN storage is just the kind of the prevalent database storage that you would consider. But what this does is that it allows the server application to actually, you know, place live data on your Windows file share. So in this case, it enables, for example, the smaller, for example, small to medium business to actually have a very viable or affordable alternative to your SAN storage, because you can just continually leveraging your existing Ethernet or your, you know, industry standard storage hardware, and then you can essentially just deploy a very SAN-like kind of storage without the complexity of management. For example, you don't have to provision logs, you don't have to configure the zones. All those have to been abstracted from you. You just can, you know, place your, you know, workload there and have it run. Especially with the SMB support in SQL Server 2012, we have seen really, really competitive performance with it. So it's becoming a very viable platform even for your production workload. So we're very excited about this particular change. And also with another one is called storage spaces. Storage spaces, what it does is that it can actually group together your commodity storage hardware. So you can group them together into pools, and they can allow for, you know, mixed deployment. For example, you can have SSDs, you can have HDDs, and then you can carve out what we call spaces in here. So spaces, it actually, you know, is just you know, using a regular file system to be formatted, and also is treated just like a regular disk. But the placement, it is at the granularity of each individual spaces, so it allows you to actually have diverse workload and accommodate for that. For example, you can have your gold level performance for your enterprise workload, while, you know, for archive, probably not that much. So in this case, this is a very exciting change that, you know, can potentially be a game changer for your private cloud infrastructure. And also, what's new with the System Center? So the space actually, it creates this kind of abstraction, so you don't actually manage the individual, the hardware disks at the hardware level, so it abstracts away all the those layers from you. Yes, you can. So this part is about, you know, what's new also in System Center. A particular scenario we want to talk about as the orchestrator and how it enables the, you know, the fast VM provisioning for your private cloud. For example, in here, I want to make sure, you know, there is going to be a new VM created when I need that for my workload. And what I can do is that you can see, you can monitor the performances across your private cloud. And for example, a performance monitor, a counter can be actually triggering, send a trigger to your operations manager. And that alert would in turn trigger an incident on your service manager. And with that, a workflow would start to be applied that includes the orchestrator. An orchestrator can in turn communicate with the VMM, Virtual Machine Manager, to create, start a new VM for you. Once that is provisioned, the orchestrator can then send back the confirmation, either failure or it's just a success, back to your service manager, and then your incident can be resolved and the initial alert is now closed. So this, I mean, a lot of the mundane tasks that you're dealing with on a daily basis can now be simplified, and then, you know, if they are error prone or they are tedious, those are gonna be, you know, automated for you. So this is the actual runbook that you can potentially use for this kind of workflow. With that, I'm handing off over to Stephen to talk about the appliances. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's been to the Serv Aquarium so far and had a look at the hardware down there? Yeah, am I on? Am I talking? Can you hear me out there? Is it coming through the speaker? No, I think I'm okay. No, I'm on. Hello. Am I good? Okay. So if you haven't been down there yet, I'd recommend you go down there and have a look. We've actually got some hardware down there. It's been running. Some of it's running the hands-on labs, and so there's some great hands-on labs down there. That's actually running on some of the HP Virtual System 3 hardware, which is what we call a reference configuration. And right next to that is actually an instance of the Microsoft Private Cloud appliance. Another quick question for you guys is what's the mix here today? Are you hands up for DBAs? Okay, so a good number. And the rest of you are developers, maybe? No, good. You're in the wrong talk. Ops, admin people, maybe? Okay. So who's already doing, kind of thinks they're doing private cloud kind of stuff? Okay, so that's a good couple of people there, right? And the rest of you, hopefully, you're here because you want to find out how to do private cloud, right? Good. Okay. So what I really want to talk to you about is the Microsoft Private Cloud Database Appliance. And this is something that we actually have down in the Serv Aquarium. It's real. It's there today. You can go down and have a look at it. I think we have a picture of it coming up, actually, as well. So one of the questions that people ask us a lot, actually, is there's a bit of confusion about what is actually in a Microsoft Private Cloud. Are you running Windows Azure? Is that how I think about it? Is it Azure actually on-premise? It's not yet. What we're actually running is we start off with Windows Server. The appliance we have down there today is still running on Windows Server 2008 R2. And then on top of that, we install System Center 2012. That's the RTM version. And then on top of that, we're able to run, for a full rack appliance we have there, between 200 and maybe close to 1,000 virtual machines. Each of those virtual machines can run its own instance of SQL Server. So there's a couple of ways we think about what's the right number to put in there is, we have a lot of capacity down there. It depends upon the size of the virtual machines you're trying to run and how aggressive you want to get with oversubscription as to exactly how many machines you can run in there. But there's a tremendous amount of capacity there. To put it in perspective, I mean, there is basically, let me get the numbers right. In that rack, there's 2 terabytes of RAM, 192 processor cores, 57 terabytes of raw disk capacity that can drive 60,000 random IOs in a 60, 40, 70, 30 read-write mix. So that's a tremendous amount of processing power and storage capacity. That's at a very competitive price point. If you look at where server costs were just 3 to 5 years ago, we've moved tremendous steps forward in that space. So one of the things that we have to think about is what does really an appliance really mean? And one of the ways we think about that is that there's a number of ways that you can actually get infrastructure into your data center. The first is you can build it yourself. So that's the self-build approach. And you can see from the slide here that there's 3 ways we think about this, that how fast it is to get to the solution, which for self-build is actually pretty slow, really. You have to figure a lot of stuff out. You have to figure out which servers do you want, what CPU should I put in there, how many cores should I have, how much memory do I need in there, how much storage do I attach to that, how much networking do I have, is that 10 gig or 1 gig, what's my storage fabric going to be, am I going to use Fibre Channel or iSCSI, I'm going to do direct attached storage. There's a tremendous number of questions that are involved in there, and it can be very daunting to actually start building out new hardware into your data center. Also, performance at scale is another key thing to think about here. It can be very hard to actually make this stuff scale. You might be lucky in actually creating a modest size solution, but does that scale to larger sizes? Often it doesn't scale very well. Now, however, you do have complete flexibility. You can choose exactly the components you want to have in there. So there is a great deal of component flexibility. So the next option you have is a reference architecture. Microsoft has a long history of producing white papers, reference architecture documentation. A lot of time we work with our hardware partners, HP, Dell, IBM, etc., to actually provide specific implementations of a reference architecture. And this is basically a paper document that actually tells you, if you buy this server and you with this specification and you buy this storage, and then there's usually some description on how you put it together. It's not prescriptive guidance, so it doesn't tell you step by step exactly what you need to do. It gives you the rough outline of what you can do to put stuff together, but you still have to buy all the individual pieces. You still have to put them all together. There is a lot of work involved in doing that. So it's faster time to solution than a self-build option, but it still takes a fair bit of time to do it. Again, performance at scale, we're looking at very specific configurations, especially our hardware partners are usually trying to push a specific set of hardware. And so these solutions don't always perform very well. One of the things we're starting to see more and more today are what we consider reference configurations. And that is an instance of that could be the HP virtual system range. That is where they've taken a specific reference architecture for database consolidation or Microsoft Private Cloud, and they have created two or three variants of that that you can actually go and purchase. And they have a number of pieces that you can specify. You get options for the number of disk drives you have and how big they are, RAM and processors. But there's some reasonably good guidelines as to what you can and can't do. And so there's a pretty good chance that it's going to work fairly well when you actually put it all together. So with a reference architecture and a reference configuration, you get reasonable component flexibility. Now, the last is what I'm really interested in talking to you about, and that's the appliance approach. And one of the reasons we use the term appliance is because pretty much everybody understands, the appliance concept is, you need a new washing machine or a fridge or a toaster. Those are appliances. You go to the appliance store, Sears or some other big box shop, and you stroll around the store and you pick the one you want, and if it's small enough, you take it home with you and you unbox it and you plug it in, and it toasts your toast straight away, right? You don't have to assemble the pieces, you don't have to install software, you don't have to do a load of complex stuff. Now, sometimes some of those products, televisions perhaps, or home entertainment products are a little bit more complex, but they're still the basic appliance model. The hardware is assembled in the factory. The software and all the other pieces of it are put together. It ships in a box as a single entity. You get it on site, you plug it in, and you turn it on. That's exactly what we mean here by an appliance. Now, one of the challenges is that there's a lot of our competitors out there today who also use the term appliance. And their use of the term appliance is a little bit more like what we think of as a reference configuration. You have to be a little bit careful, and we're trying to be a bit clearer in exactly what we mean as a company by the term appliance. And so what you actually see here is a picture of the Microsoft Private Cloud appliance. It's actually sold by HP as the HP Enterprise Database Consolidation Appliance. You can actually buy this today in half rack, full rack, and multi-rack configurations, and we'll look at that a little bit more in a minute. Now, back to our metrics. Fastest time to solution, right, or time to solution. This is absolutely the fastest. Once you decide you want one of these things, you place an order with HP. It takes them about 4 weeks to build it through their factory and get it delivered to your site. It will roll up in a big crate. You roll that crate into your data center. You plug the power in and you plug the networking in. There's a little bit of configuration needed to hook the networking up with your network. There's a bunch of training that HP consultants will come and do to your staff to help you understand how to use the system center components in their operations manager, virtual machine manager, etc. And part of that time will also be spent actually migrating your first five machines into the appliance. So at the end of the first week, you've actually got something up and running in the data center. So 5 weeks from putting your money down on the counter with HP, this is up and running in your data center. So this is absolutely the fastest way to get database consolidation or private cloud running in your enterprise. Performance at scale. We've designed this so that it scales very well indeed. It scales linearly from half a rack to a full rack up to 10 racks as one appliance unit. If you need more than that, and that is a tremendous amount of capacity, you can just add another appliance unit. And what we mean by an appliance unit is that 10 racks is about as much stuff as you can manage from a single set of system centers. So VMM and SCOM have limitations on the number of hosts they can manage and the number of virtual machines they can manage, and about 10 racks is about where that limit goes. So all you're doing with that second appliance unit is just installing another VMM and another SCOM. Component flexibility, lowest on this. There is no component flexibility. You don't get to choose anything. It's the appliance has been designed specifically to serve its purpose, to deliver against the workloads that we want to run in there, which is databases, SQL Server databases. And so if you start playing around with those components, it's not going to really work so well. You're going to break the scalability. Now, having this fixed configuration does give us a lot of power in terms of a lot of value add that we can do that you won't get any other way. And we'll look at some of those things in a minute. So here we go. Here's the picture. This is actually a picture of the database consolidation appliance or the Microsoft Private Cloud appliance in the server aquarium on the show floor actually taken yesterday. And so this is just some of the things I've just been talking to you about. Now, here are some of the data points for you on performance and scalability. That one rack is 192 cores, 2 terabytes of RAM, 54 terabytes of raw storage capacity. We use RAID 10 because it's for databases, right? So that comes down to about 22 terabytes formatted because there's a number of global spares in there as well. We can drive 60,000 sustained IOPS out of that, and that's random IOs. As Shin mentioned earlier on, as soon as you start consolidating, the concept of that you've always had of, I have data on these drives, I have log over here, I have tempdb over here, I have the OS over there, that kind of goes out the window. So when we actually provision VMs, the template VMs that we provide have a single drive. They have a C drive. And everything goes on the C drive. It makes life a lot easier. You don't need to worry about that stuff anymore. Now, some customers who want to maximize their performance might choose to implement a different design, and they're free to do that. But our finding that as soon as you start consolidating SQL instances together onto the same shared storage is you're mixing those sequential streams, and as soon as you mix two sequential streams, you end up with random I.O. So it's much better to understand that from the beginning and optimize for random I.O. from the start, and then understand how much I.O. you're going to get, and then design against those parameters, and that's what we've done here. So tune for databases. We have a full Microsoft Private Cloud implementation of System Center within the appliance. So we're actually monitoring everything that goes on in there using Operations Manager. We have a custom management pack written specifically for the appliance that understands the deep details of the hardware and can help you make really good informed decisions about how the appliance is running and what else you should add into the appliance or when you're starting to reach capacity. And then again, some of the unique appliance features are because we have this deep insight into the hardware stack and we have this very detailed management pack that understands the performance characteristics, it lets us actually enable detailed load balancing based on I.O. Now, those of you familiar with Virtual Machine Manager will probably understand about PRO, and it's with System Center 2012, they talk about dynamic optimization and power optimization. It's very easy for VMM to do things based upon CPU and memory usage. The challenge with consolidated databases is often the bottleneck is actually not on the CPU and the memory. Especially with the price of CPU and RAM today, it's really very easy to have a tremendous amount of compute power. It's much harder to have a tremendous amount of storage space and IOPS that are needed to drive those database workloads. So we spend a lot of time working on adding a management pack that understands the storage characteristics in great detail. And what that lets us do is we believe we're the first time able to actually produce a management pack and a pro pack that actually does migrations or provides pro tips recommending you actually move stuff based upon storage utilization. And so that's a very powerful thing. Now, with the current version on Windows Server 2008 R2, because you only have quick storage migration, we only generate a recommendation. We can't actually automate the movement because a quick storage migration has an outage while you're actually doing the movement. Now, when we move to Windows Server 2012 and we get live storage migration, we'll actually be able to implement an automatic pro tip such that when one storage pool is oversubscribed or overutilized, we can actually live move that VHD to a cooler pool of storage. And so that's a tremendous advantage. It's automating a lot of the taking away from you a lot of the issues you have with performance issues that customers calling in because there's an oversubscription to some pool of storage. The last point there is a single point of support. That's really important for a lot of customers. Now, if you go back to our three ways of doing things, you start off with the self-build option. You might have bought switches from Cisco. You might have bought disk drives or storage arrays from EMC. You might have bought your servers from Dell. You might have a mix of servers. You might have a mix of storage. When you're putting that all together into a private cloud, if you have any issue with that or if there's a problem anywhere, who do you start calling, right? There's no one person you can call for that. And any of you that have had issues with that kind of stuff in the past, you know, I've been on those calls with customers where you've got three or four vendors involved and everybody's saying, well, my storage is working fine, it's not my problem. The server team are saying, well, my servers are working fine, it's not my problem. The switch guys are saying, hey, the switches are great, there's no problem there. You're left with a performance issue and, you know, nobody's helping you really solve it. So with an appliance model, you get a single phone call, right? When you have an issue, you call that number and the phone rings at Microsoft. And Microsoft owns that issue and resolving that issue. Now, we have our hardware partner with HP. So if there is an issue with the hardware, say a disk fails or there's a problem with the controller, the support engineer at Microsoft will call through to HP and get them to come directly to you and solve that. But if there's any questions about that, you're still calling the Microsoft person. So there's a single person, a single incident number you're tracking to get everything resolved. And so that's one number to call, a single point of support for all the hardware and all the software in the appliance. That in itself is a phenomenal value. So here we go, just drilling into the details a little bit of the faster time to value. So on the left there, it's the left, the self-build option. You know, I actually spent quite a bit of time going through some external consultants we worked with, and we've actually produced a white paper that talks about the some of the TCO aspects of an appliance approach versus self-build. We came up with some numbers that we think that the self-build approach probably costs you, it could be as much as $2 to $3 million, okay, just to self-build. And a lot of that is in things that you don't really think about. It's your time. And it's the time of the people in your organization to spend on figuring out all these different things, designing the solution, getting proposals in from the different hardware vendors, building the hardware out, figuring out what software you have. You know, even if you go with a standard Microsoft Private Cloud implementation, you still have to install Windows Server. You still have to figure out how to build the cluster out. Building a failover cluster across many nodes is not a trivial activity. Especially if you're using disparate hardware that doesn't always work well together, there can be a lot of issues there. It can take a tremendous amount of time to resolve those things. We've done all that work for you in an appliance. We've solved all those problems. So we think, again, that's another tremendous value you get by taking an appliance approach. So again, here's the scaling, how we scale. You can start off with a half rack, which will run you know, somewhere from 100 to 300 or 400 virtual machines. A full rack is from 400 to maybe close to 1,000. Okay, I think I'm out of time. Goodness me. Well, I better run through fairly quickly. You can go to those multi-rack configurations, up to 10 racks, and then you can scale out to multiple racks as well. And there we go. Here's all the marketing information about that. 35% reduction in cost. Some great things there. You know, 90% energy reduction. MSIT actually have a really useful white paper that talks about green IT. I recommend anybody who is thinking about going to a consolidated approach should be reading that, because they paid for a multi-million dollar consolidation solution in less than a year simply on energy, cooling, and floor space alone. And I'll hand back to Jin now for the summary.
Sure. So just to summarize, I mean, we have SQL Server 2012 that is going to be providing all the capabilities for your private cloud database level. And also, you know, the appliance that Stephen just introduced, we encourage you to take a look at the server aquarium. And finally, you know, keep betting on us, because we are investing in the whole stack from the database level, from the system center, from the Windows Server level. So it's going to be a great story. And also, there are some related contents that we think would be relevant to this session and, you know, worth checking out. You can take a look and maybe some of the recordings of those. And don't forget to fill out the, you know, the evaluations. We appreciate you.
I still have three books to give away. So If anybody wants a book on SQL Server, I got one, two. Okay, you four over there are going to have to arm wrestle for it.
Well, yeah. If you have any questions, you know, find us offline, and we can, you know, take a deeper look at those. Thank you again for joining us. Thank you.